Thank you. I for one, am a lot more clear on what's going on. I think this has been a healthy discussion. And if you folks are done explaining, would you entertain questions from, I'm going to start with if there are people, folks in the audience that would like to come up, ask the question, and attempt to answer it?
Yeah, we would. I guess I would ask first if the Assembly has any questions. I don't want to take
ours up here
well,
first.
Of course, we ask the public and then bring it back, but if I'm
sorry, I don't.
I'm flexible. No, I'm okay. Flexible. This is just a discussion, so.
I was just thinking maybe we could up here
okay.
Beforehand.
I'll start with the Assembly first for something different before election. Okay.
Can I guess start?
Yes,
okay,
Mr.
thank you.
Proof.
I want to thank you all for being here tonight, very much so. Even though this will be my last meeting.
You get a half of one.
I get a half meeting. Well, this is my last real full meeting, we'll say. And I like, everything, a lot of things what you said was really good, especially about what the work you've done over in Angu and Cake and those villages and all that. I did want to touch on that is to be, and I think, that's really good, but a lot of that's been, you're dealing in a town here that's over there, it's a tough one when you're dealing with the nationalities. There you've got predominantly native areas. Here we've got a predominantly, split. And so I think that's probably one of the big, we'll go back to that 800-pound gorilla. I think that's really what it gets down to. But one of the big questions that come in the past is, utilizing the land that you guys have had access, we'll use like Cube Cove, for example, or some of these other sites, how does a non-Sea Alaska shareholder utilize these properties? And that would be one of the questions I have for you. And because, granted, readout's going to be the big issue that we're really here for. That is really the whole topic. And would that be... are they going to be stuck to the water land, to the water only? Can they utilize the land, within so many feet of it? Or do you have, are you going to have areas that you have off limits completely? But that would just be the starting questions.
The first part is Sea Alaska doesn't own Cube Cove. That belongs to Sciatica.
Okay.
We own just the subsurface. And I know that's sometimes a not well understood. So, and the idea of split estate, candidly, is not well understood. That was ANCSA created that because of the vast oil wealth that could potentially exist under a very small number of corporations. And so they said, no, we're splitting the subsurface from the surface as a means of distributing wealth, because all of the resources that we develop or harvest, we share 70% of our net revenues with the other corporations through a 7i sharing program. So they created a split estate, which in itself is an odd animal, and took us a long time to work through how that was going to work. As far as shareholder or as far as access, our land legislation basically gives access to use of the roads and the land. And candidly, our practice now is that we restrict people's access on Sea Alaska's existing ownership, mostly where we have roads and we have road conditions that are not suitable for high levels of travel or traffic. But we don't restrict anybody from actually going on the land. We give bear guides licenses to go on our property. We allow sport charter commercial people to go on because they're commercial. They deal with us as a commercial enterprise. But under the land legislation, a recreational hunter on Prince of Wales Island can go out on the roads that are there, and they can hunt on the land. We don't. That's one of the agreements that we made, was to just remove that access issue and just make it perfectly clear people can go there. There's very limited reasons to restrict accesses. In case there's environmental damage from something occurring, like excessive ATV use on a road that creates problems, where we may have a cultural property or in some small areas where we have research projects, for example, on around Huna, and then half a dozen places on Prince of Wales Island, we have, 5 or 10 or 15 acre research plots, and we need to keep those plots intact But that's the limit of our ability to restrict access. So you can go.
Okay. Mr. Christensen.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
Basically, I have just a couple questions. First of all, what do you plan to do with readout if you get it specifically? And then, again, back to access, will you have any restrictions? And will anybody need any kind of permit or any kind of anything other than a boat to get there to go dip netting? Any change from the way it's used now?
The first is we don't own the waters. The water belongs to the state. The tide, the submerged lands, that belongs to the state. I understand. No, so
people don't stand just in the water. They stand on the sides, too.
And so I'm working my way up the chain there. So we have to get to the first part. The second part is the use of the property. We think that when we're all the way said and done, nobody will know that there's a different owner. Unless something happens or something starts to occur that is what they call a derogation of the site. It says that, you know, certain uses can occur as long as it's not in derogation of the site. And that's what, you know, we also have to query BLM as to exactly what does that mean. And we're constantly probing them to get clarity and clarification on that. To damage or destroy. It's not in the interest of the. We've received a cultural property, and some new use comes on, such as Sea Alaska decides it wants to put a fishing lodge on the site. That would be in derogation. I think our view of the site is that it, and we've had we have 96 sites that were applied for. We have 89. We haven't done anything with any of them other than the work with the clans and the tribes to develop MOUs to say, okay, how do we want to manage these sites? How do we use them in a way that celebrates their native lineage and culture and heritage back to those sites? We don't view these sites as places that are developed as tourism facilities or anything. Those are all what we would consider derogation of the site. And I will mention that the deed itself says if we do something that is deemed to be in derogation of the site, the federal government reserves the right to bring corrective action. So every deed that we have right now has that specific language in there. So, I mean, there is a force of law behind all of this.
I'm just curious,
do you know what land you're actually asking for? I mean, the map just has the big circle that's thousands of acres.
The photograph that you also have on your desk is you can see Readout Lake, and there's a series of bar marks there. That was the original Wellesley Ham survey of that site, and they said that we believe that this place that inside those bars represent the property that Sea Alaska would receive or should receive. That's about 10 or 11 acres. 11 acres. Now, again, I remind you, we have to go back through the process. There's you know, easement processes, and there's surveys and other things that we all have to go through before that conveyance occurs.
Ms. Hackett.
Yeah. Okay, I understand what you say about the easements and your intent at this point in time for the property, that really nobody will know that it has changed hands. And I can believe that from you, but are there protections in there that says in 40 years when you three aren't sitting here or the current board isn't in place, that those protections stay and that intent stays? I mean, it is a corporation, mm-hmm. and corporations are corporations, and they are separate entities. And
I guess I would say right now it's only our word, but unless the board, and in working with the local tribal members, want to have something put in writing that says that in perpetuity everyone and anyone can have access, but unless we put that in writing. I can't promise you anything, but, you know, it's up to continuing discussion between Sea Alaska and the community and the tribal members on what do we want to memorialize. And I can tell you we own four 14H1 sites around Sitka now. We have 89 throughout the region. Too many numbers to keep track of. Throughout the entire region, and we haven't limited access on any of those unless it's a shaman burial site. Those are very, very important sites to our people, and we're also very leery of just access to general cemetery sites. Every site is different, and in terms of what use would be appropriate and what wouldn't. I mean, there are some uses, you know, the local clan here, the Kiksati, might have something to say about it, and that's going to be important to us in the process. In fact, I know they'll have something to say about it. So it's all site by site that we have to figure out, and it's really helpful to us to hear the concerns and the issues about readout. We haven't thought about readout in a long time because it's been in the process for so long, and all of a sudden it came out of the black hole. And so we'll have to start thinking about all these things now that it's getting so much attention and figure out how we go forward.
I want to touch one point because, again, it's a misperception, is that when that land is conveyed to Sea Alaska, we'll become the deed holder. People have said, well, you're a corporation, you go bankrupt, somebody's going to take over that property. That property carries with it the same deed, the same restrictions. It almost doesn't matter. It does not matter who owns it. The deed will have the same restrictions. You cannot put that piece of property into use that would be deemed to be in derogation of the value and the purpose of that site. So you could own it, I could own it. I mean, and I'm not saying that that's what's going to happen, but it the deed follows the land. And so it's very important, because some people say, well, gee, they'll go bankrupt and somebody will also take it over and they'll do whatever. Well, that's not the case, because the federal government is right there in a position to enforce any of the deed covenants that may exist on the site.
Would you be willing to make an agreement with the city of Sitka for an easement to have essentially the same access that it has now, the one you were speaking of earlier, to have such an agreement? Not with the federal government, with the city of Sitka, since it's on city and borough land, to have a city easement. And that would, I suspect, remove most of the people from this room, at least when it comes to readout. You said a side agreement with the city of Sitka.
Well, there's three owners here. We're one of the owners. The tribe is the other, and then the community. And I think that we've been receptive to discuss and disclose or to develop those kinds of strategies or agreements. We have not, because it all we've had is a controversial issue. We haven't really engaged in a discussion. But we've talked with the tribe. It's very clear to them that they expect subsistence use will continue at that site. And subsistence is sort of, in this, under the federal law, is pretty much colorblind. It's just, this is a community that has a subsistence right. And it's the explanation for us was exactly the same one. I need to know that I can continue to subsist at that site when you guys receive conveyance. And we've given basically the same answer, as we think that that's the proper use of the site is for that, provided that the use doesn't get out of control in some way and actually do damage to some of the uplands or some of the cultural values that may exist.
But I will say, that's not a decision us three at the table can make. That's a huge policy call that has to go to the board of directors. And so I guess I can say it's above our pay grade, at least above mine. And so it's something that we can raise with the board and in our continuing discussions with you and with the tribe here in Sitka.
And I would have even bet on that it's above your pay grade. Yes. And it's way above mine. Ms. McConnell. And then you.
I think she was the last.
So
My understanding is redoubt is different than the other places because it goes way back in time, and this other one is a different situation. So, but there's one thing that they share in common is, okay, so you get this land, what are you going to be doing with it? And so that leads me to the futures sites. And what criteria do you have in mind when you pick a site to be a future site? What makes that, what gives it that term? What does that mean? What would you maybe be doing on that land? And if you could answer that, it'd be great.
Madam Mayor and Ms. Connell, that same question was asked probably 5 years ago by a former assembly member, Reber, I believe. Mm-hmm. And we actually provided him a suggestion of what and how these sites might be used. First of all, we think that there are three people that need to participate: the community, the tribe, and Sea Alaska, and Shattuck, and you know, and depending upon the site and what their interest is. And so we see, and then what we're interested in is trying to find alternative forms of recreation, tourism, to be able to link a variety of sites over a larger geographic area. Last ship left Juneau, and the paper's on the window. You know, the better part of downtown is all papered over. We're going, you know, that's not right. We've got to find more and different kind of visitors. What we would like to be able to do is work on cultural tourism, environmental, and ecotourism, for people to be able to go to a place and say, what was it like to live here 200 years ago? What were Native people doing? What were Russians doing? What was happening? And to be able to inspire a different kind of visitor. We had some experience with German visitors. They were fascinated by Native culture, Native history, and they wanted to go out and to literally experience what's happening. And we think that those are the kinds of uses of sites, and that's what should occur. Now, we did identify a few sites which were renewable energy sites. We had one of the ones we dropped here was the idea of having a tidal energy site. The community, there was strong resistance to it, so we dropped it. But we do have some energy sites. We have a few you know, tidal energy sites. We have a few wave energy sites. We have some geothermal sites. I think there's five altogether that are, of the 30, are some form of an energy site. With the idea of being able to spur energy opportunities, what we see is the Forest Service has a system. They have some standards that make it sometimes difficult to develop renewable energy. On Prince of Wales Island, all of the renewable energy sites that have been developed on Prince of Wales Island are on Sea Alaska land. And they were done much quicker, much simpler, and less costly than would have been if they were on federal land. So we see energy as some opportunity, but we're candidly very open. The idea of sitting down with Ahani and saying, what do we do with a place like this? Can we do something? And can we create a nexus of I don't want to call them marine parks, but you have high-end visitors on very expensive vessels moving from point A to point B to point C, and being able to experience a different kind of event than coming to downtown and seeing jewelry stores or T-shirt shops, but actually getting people out and trying to bring more of that independent traveler into it. That was very much what we described in the paper we gave to Assemblymember Reber.
Thank you. Mr. Blake.
Again, thanks for being here. I had one question, and in opening your own language, you explained that you had chosen these sites for alternative economic development. And Russell, can you tell me, I've heard this piece, but can you tell me, what does that mean to you as a CEO? What does alternative economic development mean to the CEO of Ahani?
Yeah, well, I guess in my mind, it's something different than timber harvesting, something different than mineral extraction. All right, looking at ways that you get beyond resource extraction, I mean, we wrestle with that every day as a Native corporation. You know, people think it's easy for us to go cut trees. I mean, we deal with that. We've got to balance the economic responsibility we have to our shareholders with culture, right? And their ties to the land. Those are things that we have to deal with. And as we come to what we call kind of the end of our old growth harvesting, I mean, it's, you can look across the state and see what Alaska Native corporations have meant to their tribal member shareholders and what it's meant to the economic, you know, status of the state of Alaska. But we also recognize that times change, everything evolves, and we've got to look at things a little bit differently. And that's kind of in my mind, is that to say that we can't look at second growth in a new way to create a sustainable industry? Is that to say that mining is not good for the state? I don't know. It's not for me to say, but I think that there are certainly other opportunities that we can look at within the region that don't have to be resource extractive.
I want to just touch on one thing, and I just want to take your question and kind of revert a little bit, because what we missed there was the word we. What do we think alternative economic development is? Because that's really what we're offering up with these sites, is to be able to sit down with the community and to look at some ideas and to explore new systems. We've got to start doing something different. Again, in TFR, the Tongass Futures Roundtable, we talked about timber, 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 and finally one day one of our board members, a former CEO, says, you know, he slams his fist down and says, we've got to get beyond timber. We've got to find an alternative economic development, and we've got to get past these extractive industries, and that can even be lodges as an example, but let's try to get, and let's see if we can't put our heads together and develop some alternative models that create a new kind of attraction and create a new kind of visitor industry. I've cast one, which is just people, you know, going from hiking hut to hiking hut across the Swiss Alps. Well, why don't we do the same thing here? Why don't we find some kind of opportunity along that way? The emphasis here is on the we. It's the assembly, the residents, the tribes have all got to be able to hone in on this and say, we need to do something different. We don't like it when all of a sudden, the end of the year, I was here in May, and, you know, the fish weren't in. It was like you could have shot a bullet down the street. A beautiful day. It was a sunny day. I go, why don't we have independent travelers here? Why don't we have independent research going on? Why don't we have some of these other kinds of things? And so what we're focusing on is just saying, let's use these as places where we can think out of the box and have a free discussion, and it's a we discussion and not what are you going to do to us kind of a discussion. That's not what we're trying to do with those sites. We think it's just the opposite. And these are little itty-bitty things scattered across the landscape. But if we're successful in them, we can build a few successful models, then we have potentially a new platform to build off of and some new ideas to build off. And that's what we're looking to try to do.
Can I respond to that? I like your answer a lot. In fact, I think when I look at the two of you, I see a new generation, extremely bright, being responsible for your own people and your property. How do you see the best way to reassure the people of Sitka that we're all on the same page? How can we best put that together and reassure everyone that we're on the same team here? What's your idea with that?
Yeah,
I've already told you.
The Bible. We can all put our hand on the Bible. No, I think it's doing this. I mean, having forums like this where we can have open dialogue, sure, and communication. I mean, when we started Haani, when I first took the position in January, I mean, Byron, the chair of my board, said, you know, I think it's great. We've got to go out there and show people that we're going to put money on the ground, but it's also important that we get out to these communities and we just spend time talking with people. And a lot of cases, it doesn't have to be public, formal forum like this. You know, I want you to go spend some time in these communities and just go meet people and sit down and talk with people. And I think, you know, it's going to start with communication. People, all sorts of people have, you know, different views and beliefs, and, you know, I agree with you to a big case. You know, ethnicity is an issue. Yeah, maybe much easier in Cake and Angoon, maybe more difficult here, but that doesn't mean that we don't sit down and try, right? And I think there are a lot of opportunities here, and you know, I don't know if it's a generational thing, but I think you're right. It's an opportunity to come sit down with people and just say, look, it's things may be different now. You know, it's not the same as it was 40 years ago. But let's sit down and figure out a way to make this work for everybody.
Mr. Esquiro.
Obviously, the key to Readout Bay in the falls and everything is the fish there. That's why the clinkets were there. That's,
I can't hear you.
Just barely.
There. Okay. That on now? Okay. All right. The key to Readout Bay and key to that area is the fish that return there. That's why we were there. That's why citizens of Sitka have been there for as long as I've been going to Readout also. And I'm curious as to, you know, what obviously the Department of Fish and Game, State Department of Fish and Game, manages that whole area like they manage a lot of waters in and around all of Alaska. And I'm curious as to whether or not you've had any discussions with Fish and Game pertaining to you know, what happens to management if we are given this, you know, granted this request. Has there been any discussions with Fish and Game or?
I think, you know, Fish and Game has some experience with this already on 14H1 sites. I don't know that they've been, you know, they know what they can do. They know that they need to reserve certain easements. And when they do that, then they're able to continue to perform their job. And we use an example. At Sitco, we have a petroglyph site. On mm-hmm. that site, there's it's amazing. There's two trail easements, a one-acre campsite easement, and a road easement through the petroglyph site. So people, and I mean, we weren't happy with all those easements, but they basically were deemed to be valid easements, and Fish and Game is able to get access to the stream and to do the work that they want to do over there. So I think that they've been well vetted in this process. I mean, that wasn't easy, by the way. I mean, there was lots of finger pointing, and I only know this because I was there in 1980 and kind of watched some of it. But now it's become kind of standard work, and I don't know that anyone has raised any concerns mm-hmm. With us. I think the Forest Service, they're of course they want to know about the weir, but as I say, it's an easement that we expect to see there. I don't know. Even if we wanted to fight it, I'm not sure we could win that one.
Well, and just speaking as someone who's been at Sea Alaska for a few years, I know that management and the board understands the importance of fish to our people, to our communities. And we're the last ones who are going to stand in the way of management of a stream and making sure that the fish will be there. And we do a lot on our own land to make sure that our streams continue to produce. And so I just want to give you that additional assurance.
Mm-hmm. So down at Readout, you know, have you found petroglyphs, or have you, what is it you're wanting to protect? Is it jointly
It has a history. There are places that we create monuments for things that no longer exist, but it now has become important ground. So there's a cultural tie, there's a cultural history, there are clan stories and clan issues there. Some of the information that we have, We can go through and you can understand why there's no buildings there. When the Russians left, the Tlingits came back and burned down everything they could, and then they took whatever else was left that was useful. The Tlingits went back and established smokehouses there. Then the Forest Service came along and they burned all the smokehouses down. So, I mean, it's been a place that's been pretty busy. But what it's a cultural property in terms of its place, its significance to the cultural stories, the lineage, the place names, and to the Kiksati clans. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Cruz.
You just mentioned about the fish, you know, how the fish are there and you would want to see to it that they stay there. And that creates a big question is it's already been stated before that, you know, Redoubt is a dead lake. Basically, it has to be fertilized every year. Fish and Game has done it for years. Now they've put it off, and I think Forest Service now is doing it. And if I'm not mistaken, the Forest Service doesn't want to do it anymore either. They'd like to bring it off. What's that going to do with you guys potentially that, you know, you might be the one holding the bag for fertilizing? That's like 100,000 a year that they put out there.
Well, unfortunately, I'm familiar with that project.
Yeah.
I think we tried one on Heda Lake at the same time. It didn't work there, but it worked here. We don't have that right. We don't have the right to put any chemicals in the water. We don't have any right to do that. That right really rests with the landowners. All we have is a little sliver of ground, and it doesn't, even then, we don't own or have a right of the water. That all belongs to the state. So, yeah, and so I think, you know, there's that you've raised a secondary issue, which is that we may have another interest in common of how do we maybe continue such an activity. But we ourselves, I mean, all we're doing is we just own a little sliver of land, not the hundreds of acres that involve the lake and everything else. So that, but again, that's where there's a common interest. That's where a Haani kind of thing comes to pass to say, okay, how do we talk about these kind of places? It's a cultural property, so I mean, we're not, you know, we're very sensitive to that. But still, some of these things have been successful. They're well accepted by the community. Our tribal members were very clear with us on that, and so those would be things we would need to explore. But I think that's separate from actually the land ownership. Whether we had the site or not, that would be a fair discussion for us to engage in with as a Haani type of project, is just how do we build community affiliation and relationships, you know. And ultimately, when we leave tonight and each time we come here, we want to make people's lives just a little better, you know, just to be able to say we made somebody's life just a little better. We solved a small problem or a big problem.
Ms. Hackett.
As I know you know, subsistence is a very huge part of our base here, not only the Native people, but the non-Native as well. And our subsistence status hangs on a thread, and every year, might be every other year, I'm not sure, you know, especially Sitka tribe works very hard to keep our subsistence status. Along with that, Redoubt, there's more permits for subsistence issued for Redoubt than any other fish stream in the region or in our area. And I just am wondering about and have some concern about how private ownership of the lands surrounding the falls where subsistence dipnating and whatnot is done, especially ownership that doesn't and can't guarantee into the future that that right will always be held by the people at large. For access to that, I'm wondering how that may be viewed in determining our subsistence status, and what type of a concern that might bring to maintaining our subsistence status here. I don't know if there's an answer to that or not. Our rural status for subsistence, yeah. Thank you.
Well, subsistence can and does occur on private property and state property, not just federal property. There's just different rules that apply, but there's still opportunities, and there will be opportunities for subsistence on these lands. And I don't believe having it in private ownership affects the what qualifies as the number of subsistence users in a community. We are very aware of the rural status issues here in Sitka, and we monitor those and provide assistance to the tribe and to the community when we can on that issue. We also watch the Saxman rural status because of their proximity to Ketchikan. They are in danger of losing their status. But I can assure you we monitor that and want to be a part of making sure that Sitka and Saxman do not lose their rural status, because we know how important it is to this community and to the community of Saxman to maintain that that status, to continue to be subsistence, have subsistence priorities in their community. But beyond that, I don't think the change in ownership will change the designation as a rural community for purposes of subsistence. Does that?
Mr. Cruz.
I want to get back to the easement end of things here. Is you got your 9 steps in here as to where this goes. Where would be the we talked about it about a few questions back, and I didn't get a chance then, but where would be the where people submit, I mean, where we request easements, you know, to be put into? Like, you know, the city would probably want one, the tribes would want one, you know, just general people would like to see these easements in writing, or these things in writing, as opposed to just, you know, putting the hand on the Bible, you know. So, but, and there's two areas. You got item 4, it says request third party and easement recommendations. And then on item 6, it's got, you know, issue easements. But what I got is item 5, it's just basically say a 30-day comment period unadvertised, which is kind of a scary one there, you know. I mean, is there going to be a time that everybody would know that we could submit these, or how you'd be approving them?
Well, first of all, the easements are there's two things that happen. Some people, first of all, they will ask if there's a prior existing right, because there's a possibility. For example, we've asked for conveyance of some sites, and we ended up, they were a native allotment, and, you know, and they weren't properly documented on the title plats, and so those rights are recognized, and those are, you know, those are taken out. That's part of the process when they convey the land. The second part is on the easement. The number of people that actually get to ask for the easement are fairly limited, but it is the state of Alaska. It is the Forest Service. So if you can go look at any of the easements that we have on our land, you know, we'll have Department of Transportation, we'll have Fish and Game, we'll have, those are probably the two major state agencies that will hold easements, as well as the Forest Service. And in some cases, we've had like a FERC easement. So there is a process. It is important that the city work with the state or Fish and Game. And you know, we're committed to work with you as well, as easements are being identified, you know, to make sure that they're, you know, that we can reach an agreement on them, because that makes it much easier. And we're asking BLM exactly what can we agree to in an easement. In some cases, this is a process that we don't get to control all the way either. There are very specific rules on how they deal with it. But the key is the easements are. It's important to stay engaged with us. It's important for us to stay engaged with you. And there are certain agencies, you know, the state of Alaska gets to ask for easements, and the Forest Service in this case gets to ask for easements.
Can I follow up on that? I guess I probably should probably refer to it more as a plat note as opposed to easements, because that's where a lot of this is going to be, is like, you know, the utilization of the land, or utilization crossing over for fish and that, mm-hmm. that it would be, those are just more notes than easements. And that's kind of what I was after.